And for his next trick, the amazing Joel will transplant one of his very own kidneys into the body of the incredible Linda.
I still can't believe it. Sometimes I think, oh yeah, I got Joel's kidney in me. It's kind of a surreal thing.
That's Linda Miller, nurse, mother, and kidney transplant recipient. Linda and librarian, author, magician, and living donor Joel Shoemaker are here to tell us their beautiful story of friendship. I'm Sarah Jane Castro, Senior Director of Marketing and Communications for the National Kidney Foundation of Illinois, and your host for this edition of The Journey Continues. Joel and Linda, thank you so much for coming on The Journey Continues. How did you two meet one another?
So Linda's daughter, Sarah, and I were in the same grade in school. And I feel like we just hung out all the time, doing a lot of theater together. We went specifically on theater field trips quite a bit. I referenced that our friendship might have started because of snacks that Linda packed for a field trip. But we just like pretty quickly became inseparable and have remained in touch since. And so Linda's been a part of my life for a long time now.
That's wonderful. What did Sarah and her family mean to you as a teenager? It sounds like the snacks were a big draw.
You know, and cooking in general, Linda still cooks some of my favorite food for me sometimes when I get home. Yeah, I mean, like, it was just a place to go after school. It was just like they were super loving family and just always treated me so great. Our families got along well. Also, both families went to Catholic Church. And so, like, just our lives we overlapped quite a bit with our interests.
Linda, what did you think of young Joel?
Well, I loved him. It was interesting because Sarah got really involved in a lot of things in high school, theater and music. She wasn't sporty, so she didn't do band or any kind of sport. She did do chorus in junior high. But it was like when she hit high school, she found her place. And so I believe it was at the start of your freshman year that the whole bus trip somewhere and I'd packed the snacks. And anyway, they became inseparable. So one day I said, well, why don't you just have Joel come over for supper? And I've always got enough, you know, and I had a family of four and there was always enough for one more person. So he did. So then he came again and again. And pretty soon he started saying, what's your mom having for supper? And she'd say, oh, I saw roast out on the on the counter. So anyway, I just loved it. He came over. I finally said, Joel, you just come anytime you want. So anyway, I just immediately loved Joel. How can you not? He's just a fresh air. He is positive. I've never met a more positive person in my life. Always looks on the good things. That's how I felt about him.
It was always a kid who liked hanging out with the parents probably more than I liked hanging out with the kid.
Yeah. So
I understand that draw to the mom. Linda, how did you learn that you had an issue with your kidneys?
Well, in my family, it's been traced back to my great-great-grandmother. And then my grandmother had polycystic kidneys, and my mother had polycystic kidneys, as did her sister. And so I knew there was a 50% chance of me getting it. So when I was first in college, I was getting a lot of UTI. So they decided to check me for polycystic kidneys. Back then, they didn't check you, and there was really no need to before you were 18 or 19. So they checked me, and sure enough, I had polycystic kidneys. And interestingly enough, my whole life, all I really wanted to be was a mother. I mean, I was a nurse and I enjoyed my career, but I really wanted to be a stay-home mother. And so I did do half-time a lot, so that was good. But the doctor who did my IVP, the nephrologist, he said to me, just like this, real cold, you have polycystic kidneys, it's a terrible disease, and you need to be sterilized. You do not need to be passing on to anybody. I came home just devastated and crying to my mom. And I said, but I really just want to be a mom. And so she didn't quite know what to say. So her doctor, who was very entwined in her life, I went and saw him. And he sat me down. He said, Linda, he said, you can be a mom. You can be anything you want to be. He said, who knows by then what will be happening in the world of kidney failure and things like that, and you may never go into kidney failure. So, of course, my heart was relieved, and, you know, I led a really normal life, really, till about 58. I started kind of feeling tired and seemed like my brain just wasn't clicking very well. And so that is how I found out, and that's kind of how the first part of the journey went.
So did PKD affect your day-to-day life when you're working as a nurse and you're raising four children?
No, I only had two children, two girls. Did I say four?
Okay.
I meant two. It did not affect my life, except for my kidneys are very large. I think about each one's the size of a football. And so my whole abdomen is full of cysts, and they burst sometimes, and they're painful if anything, I get any pressure on it. But other than that, no. I mean, I traveled to Africa. I traveled to Hawaii. I was very active, hiking and all kinds of things. So yeah, I didn't let it affect my life. And at the same time, for 17 years, my mother was on hemodialysis, and I helped take care of her 17 years with all of her issues for dialysis. And actually, the last 8 months, she came here, and I took care of her until she died. So I knew what that kind of life was going to be. So I just prayed from a very early age that I would somehow get a kidney transplant.
When did you learn that you would need a transplant?
They started watching my numbers closely when I was probably, oh, I'd say 50. It started declining, you know, little by little. Then there was a couple big drops. And then I got down to 17 at the lowest. And that was kind of interesting because the physician I was going to, the nephrologist, I really liked him. I'd had a good relationship with him. Anyway, when I was going to have the transplant, he got very angry with me and said, you need to wait until you get down to a GFR of about 8. And I said, but I have a donor now. And he just really didn't like that. So I had to change doctors. So that is how that kind of went.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't imagine hearing that. Well, wait until you feel even worse.
Yeah. And then how could I work? That,
yeah. Oh my goodness, yeah.
How could I work and supply our insurance? That was the big thing, because I supplied the insurance. So how in the world was that, you know, I was already struggling, not terrible, but I was struggling the last couple years, you know. I couldn't imagine going down eight more points, you know.
Right, yeah. Joel, how did you hear that Linda was in need of a kidney donor and that she was ready for transplant?
I'm pretty sure she or Sarah or someone posted on Facebook about it. And I think my sister saw the post first. And I sort of remember getting a text message from my sister like, why does Linda need a kidney? I'll give her mine. And I was like, I don't know. I'll give her mine. And so then I think my sister and I both actually were interested in getting tested for it. And we knew nothing about like how the process all went. I believe that St. Louis was already the place that was going to occur. And so they sent us vials or for blood. And I'm pretty sure that they only test one at a time. And so they just happened to test mine first. And I think that's how I won. And so, you know, Facebook's not great for a lot of things, but it was great in this case, I think.
What motivated you to donate? It sounds like it was pretty immediate.
It was pretty instant. I don't know, actually. I think just my love for the Miller family more than anything. And also, I guess that's just like kind of how I was raised, maybe, or just like the mindset that I've always had. Like, if I can do something to help someone, like, let's do it kind of a thing. Like you said, it was pretty immediate and it didn't require a lot of thought. There wasn't a lot of like mulling it over, worrying about the risks or anything like that. Really, it was just like, if we can do it, let's do it.
Love it. Did you tell Linda or Sarah that you were being worked up to be her donor?
That is a great question. I think I did, because they send you like a questionnaire or something. I'm pretty sure I filled it out and they're like, why do you want to donate? And the only thing I could think of was because I love Linda Miller or something like that. And I wrote it and I'm pretty sure I took a picture of it and sent it to them or something. So I know that I didn't keep it a secret. I'm pretty sure they knew pretty much from the beginning.
What happened that I remembered, I was getting pretty depressed actually, because there was a couple people that wanted to donate, but because of kidney stones or diabetes or high blood pressure, they couldn't. And one very healthy person that said she'd always said she'd give me her kidney, and then she didn't. And so I thought, nobody's going to step up to the plate. I'm going to have the same life as my mother. So I was getting really disheartened. So I was out in the yard and I get this phone call. And since I'm a nurse, a lot of Sarah's friends, back especially in high school and stuff, they call me with medical questions. Oh, did you know about this and that? So I see Joel Shoemaker. So I'm like, hey, Joey. I said, what can I do for you? And I remember exactly. He said, well, nothing, but I think I can do something for you. And I said, "What? Well, what's that?" And he said, I want to give you my kidney. And I immediately just started crying and I was overwhelmed. And I said, now, wait a minute, you don't know the risks and you really need to think about this. And he said, no, I'm going to do it. So then you had probably sent the things in, but I didn't know. Then, and this has meant so much to me, he sent me a picture of what he wrote. Why did he want to give me the kidney? And he said, because she's the most deserving person I know. And to think that one person in my life really thinks that I am a truly deserving person, that I'll carry that to my grave. I mean, that was, I can't ask for anything better than that.
That's a much better story than what I was telling. Good job, Linda.
Well, I do remember that. And the most, I got to tell you too, his family, well, I grew up with both his mom and dad. In fact, his dad was in my grade in school. And we were not friends, but, you know, we were, you know, acquaintances, friendly, but, you know, we weren't close or anything. And I have to say, they, as far as I know, never said one thing about, oh, don't do it. Don't, you better think about this. They were on board from the very beginning. We all went to the hospital. It was just so beautiful. I mean, that really your parents raised you both, you and your sister, as extremely giving, loving people. And a hats off to them.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
I got teary-eyed, and that's just so sweet, and I want to be part of this family now.
The food's good.
Were there any bumps along the way when you were getting worked up to donate?
From my perspective, no. Actually, it was pretty seamless. There was one thing that happened that was a little bit frightening. I'm sure I told Linda because you know, again, she's a nurse, so she's who I'd call for medical. My husband's a nurse as well. So, but one time the coordinator person called me on my phone and left a message on Friday afternoon, so right into the weekend, that I may have to get another, I'm not medically minded at all, so I think it was like a CT scan or something. She said, I might need to get another one. She said, they may have found something. And that's all she said. And I was like, cool. And so I couldn't call her back because I didn't get it until late Friday. And, you know, it was the weekend. And so like, I don't necessarily like, I don't fault her at all. I'm not going to name drop or anything, but I'm not entirely sure that that was the best practice. And so anyway, so I called back on Monday, all freaked out. And I did have to go in for another scan. And they, I think they thought they might've seen something on my pancreas or something, but it wound up being nothing. And I was able to proceed. But that was the only time during the process that there was any sort of hiccup. Otherwise, everything was honestly pretty easy and pretty quick. I think, Linda, the whole thing was like 5 months of tests before we were operated on.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. And I think basically we just waited kind of in line for surgery. I think everything was good for quite a while. And then they said, well, we'll just schedule for this date. And we're like, okay, or can you do this date? Barnes was wonderful to work with.
Yeah.
Highly recommend them to anyone. So what a miracle and what a gift. And I pray every day that Joel is always protected by God in safety, in health, and blessings, everything. Because, I mean, I still can't believe it. Sometimes I think, oh yeah, I got Joel's kidney in me. It's kind of a surreal thing. I'm like, oh yeah, there he is, you know.
Yeah.
And here he was post-op, not very long. As soon as he kind of got woke up and got to it, here he comes with his IV pole with Andrew, and they come walking in my room to see how I am within a few hours after surgery.
Yeah, and they do say, and I think this is true, that I did pretty much wake up and want to show the nurse a magic trick for some reason. So I'm pretty sure I did a card trick or something, yes, like pretty much right away. I probably was still on drugs because I don't really remember that, but I'm sure it happened.
You're true to your own character, I guess.
I suppose so.
Linda, what did the transplant coordinator say to you when you got that call that we have a donor, he's a match, it's all clear?
I just wept. I was at work, of course. And so I went in one of the exam rooms and I just was like, you know, really? Because, you know, here's something interesting that I'm a nurse. I didn't know. I'd not dealt with transplants. But you really don't have to match like a bunch of HLA matching stuff. So really, we just matched our blood type. That was it. But because we could do the transplant, because he had no antibodies, I had no antibodies, so there was no antibodies going to fight against each other for rejection. So that is really the only thing we matched. I don't think people understand, you know, as long as you're same blood type and you're both healthy and no antibodies, you can do it.
Joel, you mentioned in your New York Times tiny love stories that the transplant coordinator asked Linda if she knew that you were gay.
Yeah, so that's an interesting story. That's another, again, not going to name drop, but that was another thing that the donor coordinator maybe like could have done better. I'm not sure. Like, there's legitimate cause for concern, I'm sure. This is exactly what happened. Was I was at a conference for the Illinois Library Association in Peoria, Illinois. It's a pretty big event and I'm on a lot of committees. So I was in what I'm assuming was a pretty big meeting or something. But throughout this 5-month process, and I never answer my phone, nobody answers their phone, but throughout this 5-month process, if the area code was 312, I would answer it because that's St. Louis. That meant that it was something to do with the kidney. And I knew that. And I knew that it was, you know, obviously important. Like, they don't just call to say, how you doing? So I answered it. So left a pretty important meeting, took the phone, and she was like, are you sitting down? And I was like, no. But then, so I started like pacing the hallway at the Peoria Civic Center, you know, just one of those things that you'll never forget, because I was assuming that, again, like this was going to be some huge news or something. And it was because I brought my fiance at the time to one of the tests in St. Louis. I mean, he's a nurse. And so obviously, if I had questions, he would know the answers, or at least could understand the doctor or something, you know, so obviously, it was good. It was an asset to have him there with me. But because I brought him, somehow that alerted them that I was gay. And so she wanted me to sit down so that she could deliver the news that she had to tell Linda that I was gay. And it was really hilarious because, like, again, like, we've been friends forever. And so I remember pacing her delivering that news, quote unquote, and I did not laugh because I'm not rude, but I said, no, that's fine. You can tell her. No problem. And then I hung up and went back to my meeting. But it was just a bizarre phone conversation. And then I'm assuming she called Linda. I don't know what happened after that.
Yep. She called me and she said, I have to tell you that, and I understand why they have to do this. And it shouldn't be this way because you do the HIV testing on everybody. But because Joel is gay, we don't know if you know this, but Joel's gay, he's a high-risk kidney. Do you still want it? And I started laughing. And I said, well, heck yes, I want it. So that was kind of funny. I was just like, oh, heck yeah, yeah, I've known that for a long time.
We had a good laugh about it, too, when we just randomly met at that restaurant. Linda, do you remember? And
yeah.
I just remember laughing about it, obviously, after both of us had been called, because it was just, you know, humorous the way it all came up, I think.
I'm sure there are people who don't know, and then they have to tell them, and you know, you don't know their life and all that. So, but anyway, yeah, it was, we were so entwined. It was just kind of funny. Yeah. We're like, yeah, I know that. It's okay. I'll take it.
So it sounds like that's standard procedure. It wasn't just like a one-off kind of thing.
I would imagine it's standard.
What was recovery like for both of you? Joel, it sounds like you were pretty up and at them right after, but
I still think about like, easy is the wrong word probably, but maybe not. I mean, like, I was maybe in the hospital for 2 or 3 days afterwards. And then when we came home, I am nearly certain that I went back to work like half a week later. And I think they say that it's something supposed to be something like 3 to 6 weeks off or something. And I never had to take any of the medicine that they give you afterwards or anything like that. I really had never had any issues. I still haven't, thank goodness. So my recovery was pretty much a breeze.
That's great. How was yours, Linda?
Well, it was interesting. obviously, he's very tough, but I'm pretty tough usually. And so I had a great big hockey stick incision, maybe 6 or 8 inches. I know it's pretty big. You know, incisional pain's incisional pain. But what really was hard was at the time of transplant, they give you 750 milligrams of steroids all at once. Shoot it in your system. So then 10 days later, I stayed down in St. Louis for 2 weeks so I could be close to the hospital and recovering in case I had a problem. And 2 weeks later, one of my blood tests came back weird. So they're like, we think you might be in rejection. You need to come right in. And I was hospitalized and they did a kidney biopsy right in the bed. And it was her first time ever doing the kidney biopsy. That was not pleasant. Plus, since there was a thought that maybe I was in rejection, which I wasn't, they shot in another 500 milligrams. So that is a ton of steroids. So I really couldn't think for 6 months. I mean, it was like I had dementia. And I, you know, different drugs affect different people differently, but I recovered fine. Within 5 days, I was walking a mile. I mean, it was uncomfortable, but it was, my mind was just gone. And to the point where I drive into Champaign going somewhere and I couldn't remember how to get there. I'd have to pull over and think, now, wait a minute, where's that at? I always figured it out, but I mean, and my husband thought, oh my gosh, you've got dementia. It must be very unusual because they said, anesthesia can sometimes mix people up. And about 6 weeks is the longest that kind of mixes you up. But it was 6 months. And then I finally started getting better. But I don't know if that was usual or unusual.
Yeah, that sounds very disorienting.
Oh, it was terrible. I thought
the physical part maybe isn't so bad, but to have your
mind gone.
Your mind. Yeah.
I thought, I'm 60 years old and I don't even know where I'm at. And I've lived in this town my whole life. Yeah, I was scared, very scared.
You mentioned earlier that your native kidneys cause you some pain due to the cyst. Do you still have those kidneys?
Yeah. I asked them if they could take them out at time of transplant. And they said, no, it's just way too much risk, way too much surgery. So they said, if, you know, we get through the transplant and if you start having infections in the cyst or severe pain where you can't stand it, then we'll talk about if you get your native kidneys out. Kind of wanted them out for the first year or two. And then I thought, you know what? They're so huge. I mean, you know, think about trying to get a football out of your, you know, out of an incision. So I thought, you know what? I've lived with them this long. I'll just keep on unless something happens. So I just kind of accepted. I got a belly.
What has having a transplant allowed you to do that maybe you couldn't do before?
I would have been on dialysis and that would have been, you know, you would chain down basically. But I just continue to live a normal life and, you know, go to my grandkids' soccer games and babysit them sometimes and travel some and just living a normal life that I could have never lived on dialysis. The general public think, yeah, well, you just get a transplant and you're completely well. Everything's just perfect. Well, it's not a cure. It's a treatment. And you're on medications for the rest of your life that have a lot of side effects. So it's not like you just get it and you feel like you're 20 again. But you know what? It's the way to go.
Yeah, it certainly opens you up to some other opportunities that dialysis probably couldn't.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Are you still nursing?
No, I quit after the transplant. Well, I couldn't think for 6 months and I knew your employer wasn't going to, they weren't very kind. So that wasn't going to happen. Plus, I was ready to be done. And so thank God you get short-term disability. So I was able to retire then.
Joel, do you think that your love for Linda maybe subconsciously led you to falling in love with a nurse?
Wow.
That's a good question.
Sure. I have no idea. Andrew McCurdy found me via Match.com. So I feel like, but yeah, I mean, maybe we clicked because of the nursing thing. I don't know. That's wild to think about. But I've had a nurse in my life for a long time, and Linda has helped way before the kidney thing with other, like, I had a surgery once and Linda had to help me because my mother could not. So, you know, it's been good to have Linda in my life for a while.
And now she can retire and let
Andrew take
over. That's
right. There you go.
Over.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And Andrew can help me sometimes.
<That's right.
maybe. laughs> It's really been a journey, and I feel so grateful every day. It was a miracle. I feel like God inspiring Joel to step up to the plate was a miracle because, you know, of all the people, friends, family that you thought maybe would do it, and then here comes Joel and left out of left field, I'm doing it. I just feel like, you know, God inspired him to do that. And that I felt like it was a true miracle for me.
Joel, I hope we can look for your next book to feature the heartwarming tale of a young man who donates his kidney to the mother of a childhood friend.
It certainly should be. Yeah. I'll fit that into the next book.
Okay, great. Are there any final thoughts or words of wisdom either of you want to share with our listeners?
I would personally just say that it's a great thing to give some thought to if you're able to donate. I mean, obviously there are risks, and certainly I was blessed with a pretty easy recovery and little issues, and obviously that's not going to always be the case, but I do think it's minimally invasive enough that it's worth giving some thought to if the situation ever came up.
And for me, I guess I would tell I pray for all kidney people every day. I would say never give up. Don't lose hope, because you never know what's going to happen, number one. And positivity is better than negativity. And I just think there's so many new things on the horizon that there's a lot of hope for the future for many of us and hopefully all of us. So just keep on keeping on. And as hard as it is sometimes, just don't lose that hope.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And it also sounds like making pot roast for your children's friends doesn't hurt.
Yeah, pays off. See?
It's all about the mashed potatoes and gravy.
Thanks so much to our guests, Joel Shoemaker and Linda Miller, for sharing their story of friendship and living donation with us. If you'd like to learn more about transplantation or becoming a living donor, visit the National Kidney Foundation of Illinois website at nkfi.org. I'm Sarah Jane Castro, and this is The Journey Continues. Prevention is a key part of our mission at NKFI. That's why at the end of each episode, we offer a health or nutrition tip.
Here's today's nutrition tip about sodium. Our bodies need a small amount of sodium to function, but we typically consume much more than we need. Most of the sodium we consume in our diet is in the form of salt, which is made up of 40% sodium and 60% chloride. The words sodium and salt do not necessarily mean the same thing, but are often used to describe the same concept. For example, on the food label, the word sodium is listed to describe how much sodium is in a food product, while the front of the package may list no salt or low in salt or no added salt. About 70% of the sodium in our diet comes from packaged, highly processed foods and restaurant meals. Too much sodium can increase blood pressure, and high blood pressure over time is a risk factor for heart disease and strokes. It's recommended that adults consume less than 2,300 milligrams a day of sodium, which is equal to 1 teaspoon of salt. Some people may be recommended to consume no more than 1,500 milligrams a day of sodium for some health conditions like high blood pressure or chronic kidney disease. Following a low sodium lifestyle can be made easier by choosing to follow some of the following tips. Check food labels and choose the ones with the lowest amount of sodium per serving. Pick fresh or frozen poultry that has not been injected with the sodium solution. Select condiments with care and choose ones that are reduced or lower in sodium versions. Choose canned vegetables with no added salt and frozen vegetables without salty sauces. If you have to choose a canned vegetable or canned beans with salt, rinse them, drain and rinse them, and you can cut up to 40% of the sodium. Flavor your foods with onion, garlic, herbs, spices, citrus juices, and vinegars in place of salt. Ask at the restaurant if the dish can be made without any additional salt to it. And always taste your food before adding any salt. With today's nutrition tip, I'm Melissa Prest, a registered dietitian nutritionist